So we're up to Daf Samach, and we're going to take a look again at the bottom of Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. We might not read it inside, but we'll just kind of, summarize the main points, so that we'll be able to start Daf Samach. So the Gemara quotes a statement of Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman basically says that the whole discussion is about the status of a ladder, of a sulam. And the Gemara had quoted a statement in the name of Rav that a sulam has two different dinim, and we're always going to be mekil. The status of a sulam could go in one of two ways, and we'll always be mekil in whatever we need. So it could either have what's called a Toras Pesach or a Toras Mechitza. And we're going to now try to juggle that position with another statement of Rav Nachman, which is quoted here on the last line of Nun Tes Amud Beis. And Rav Nachman's talking about a case, and since you have the picture in front of you, you'll see it on the bottom of Nun Tes Amud Beis. You have two floors, one floor on top of the other, and the people on the top floor are called the Anshe Mirpeses, which means that they have some sort of a veranda that separates them from the lower floor. And the halacha is going to be here that at least in one case, there'll be two scenarios, but in one scenario, it's the Anshe Hamir Peset, they generated an Isar on the Anshe Achatzer, in the bottom floor. Meaning in the absence of an Eruv between the two houses, the house on top or the apartment on top and the one on the bottom, there's going to be an Isur. Unless, and now we're up to Daf Samach Amud Aleph, Im Yesh Lefanov Daka Arba'a, if they create in front of this ladder, if they create a Pesach, which is lower than four tfachim, and that's a kind of a statement, I mean, don't take me literally, but metaphorically, it's like a statement that's being made that we've created a Pesach up on top, you know, for the people that are on top. And we now want to be mistalek. We want to cut ourselves off, so to speak, from using the chatzer. That's called daka. We touched on it in the last shiur, but now we're seeing it sort of head on. And lifnei hasulam shel hamirpeset, in front of this ladder, as the ladder reaches up to the Mirpeset, they created a small Pesach, which is at a height of four tfachim. And I think in the diagram, at least that I have, which you also have from the Oz V'Hadar, you'll see that there's a little bit of a kind of a window on the top floor between the two apartments, between the two doors over there. So I think that's called a daka. And by virtue of the fact that there's a daka, the mechanism is such that it's a statement on the part of the B'nei HaAliyah, meaning those who live on the Mirpeset floor, that they want to separate themselves from the Bnei Achotzer on the bottom floor. And in such a case, Eina Oseres, but Vim Lav, in the absence of this little window of four tefachim, Oseres, which means that the residents of the top floor generate an Isur on the residents of the chutzah, the bottom floor, because they have access to the chutzah. It makes it like a common chutzah to both. And how do they get access to the chutzah? They go down the ladder. Now we see from Rav Nachman here that the ladder serves as a kind of Pesach. The word Pesach here in this context means it connects the two houses, the top house with the bottom house, and that's why Oseres, in the absence of a Daka. So that we see that we're not always willing to give the Daka a status, I'm sorry, to give the Sulam a status of a mechitza, which is lakula, because it separates the two, but rather we give it the status of a pesach, which is now lechumra, such that if there's no daka, then the elyonim osrim ala techtonim, because this sulam is given the status of a pesach. That's called toras. Yeshel of Toras Pesach. So how can you reconcile that with the other statement of Rav Nachman that will go lakula and will be lenient in both directions if we have to set up, for example, the sulam as a mechitza, will go lakula. Here we're setting it up as a Pesach l'chumra. So the Gemara says, Hochamai askinan, what's the case here of these two floors with the merpeset outside the top floor, below gavah merpeset asara? Again, it's very hard to imagine such a thing, unless maybe the lower floor is subterranean, I don't know. But the merpeset here is less than 10 tefachim from the ground. And therefore, it's considered al pi din, as if, yeah, thank you. Oh, great. So I think that Jerry will join us. As a result, we now have the following halacha, that the aliyah, right? Let me just let Jerry in. That the Dayorei Haliyah, I mean, those who live on the top floor, it's as if they live on the bottom floor. In other words, we combine the two because the top floor is not separated from the bottom floor by 10 tefachim. And the Gemara raises now the following objection. The Gemara believes that if, as you say, the merpeset is not 10 tefachim above the ground, it's 9.9 tefachim above the ground, then I don't think that daka, meaning opening up this small window, would serve as a pesach that would separate the top floor from the bottom floor. Because again, if they're not separated by 10 tefachim, then it's considered as if the top floor is on the karka. It's like it's integrated into the ground. So the Gemara answers, b'megufefes ad eser amos, which means that the merpeset on one end and on the other end has gifufim. You may remember gifufim are sort of vestiges of a mechitza, of a kosel. So the vestiges of the kosel on both ends of this mirpeses, and the distance, what we call the pirtza, between the gifufim on one side and the gifuf on the other, is 10 amos. And actually, up until 10 amos, we can still view this as a mechitza. So it means that the mirpeset is virtually surrounded by a mechitza. Again, it's not completely surrounded by a mechitza, because otherwise you'd have no access to the apartment on the second floor or getting out of the apartment. But on the other hand, since you have halachic mechitzos, because the pirtza here is up to 10 amos, is therefore kevan di ovidaka is taluke es taluke lemehocha. So I'm going to read to you a little bit of the Hebrew translation here, and we'll try to explain it. He says, Yesh mechitza gemura saviv lechol mirpeset, chol amirpeset, Lefichach nidonim dayore haliyah kidorim b'shus acheres. Right, the mechitza is a separation between the dayorim of the aliyah and the dayorim of the bnei achotzer on the bano. And even though there's an opening in this mechitza, and the opening is 10 amos wide, but nevertheless, it still serves its purpose. Adayin he nidonim kidorim b'chotzeshrei eina merpesa gavoi menu asar tvachim. So technically, we're in a sort of gray area here, sort of like a rope that's being pulled in two different directions, because on the one hand, the height of this merpeset is less than 10 tfachim, which means that basically it's like the dayore hamerpeset or dayorim of the chatzer. They're mamish down on the chatzer. But on the other hand, since there are these gipufi that are technical legal mechitzos around the merpeset, therefore, what we're going to allow is to separate between the Bnei HaMirpeset and the Bnei HaChatzer by setting up a daka, by setting up this Pesach, which is four tfachim in width. And in such a case, the Dayorei HaAliyah, those who live on the Merpeset floor, they have revealed their intention that they want to be mistalik, they want to separate themselves from the use of the chatzah. They have their own mirpeset, they have their own opening, and that's a statement, a demonstration that they are separate. And we're up to Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel. Kosel shebein shtei chatzeros. Now we have two chatzeros, with two batim that spill into each one of these chatzeros, and there's a kosel that separates between the two chatzeros. Sheritzafo bisulamos. Up and down along this kosel, they set up one ladder after the other. And the sulam, will facilitate the ability to climb over the kosel, to get to the other side. So Shmuel says, Afilu b'yeser me'eser, even if he sets up one sulam after the other on the width of this kosel, more than 10 amos, nevertheless, Torah's mechitza olav. Notice the din is that the kosel between these two chatzeros is considered like a kosel that's completely nifratz. It's completely open, it's breached. And it's breached now more than 10 amos, which means that the two chatzeros are now combined one with the other. Now we'll see what the significance of this is in just a minute. But let's first derive the halachic conclusion here of Shmuel. Shmuel is saying that one Eruv will suffice for both chatzeros. They cannot separate into two chatzeros and set up an Eruv for each chatzer individually. Because according to Shmuel, Toras Machitza Olav, the Kosel, despite the Sulamot, still maintains its status of a Machitza, separating between the two chatzeros. And therefore, we're not going to say that these sulamos... Just one second. So again, as I mentioned at the outset of our discussion today, we can subsume or categorize a sulam under one of two categories. The two possibilities. It's either a machitza or a Pesach. And Shmuel says that these sulamos have the status of a mechitza. He says the following. Hadinu shekosel bein shtei chatzer shenifratz biyosef b'yeser amos mevatel samechitza b'neem. Shmuel saying that we don't view this as a pirza, which tears down, so to speak, figuratively tears down the mechitza and invalidates it. But rather, yesh mechitza shlema beineim, and the sulamos, which are set up on a width of, as we said before, more than 10 amos, we're not going to say that the sulamos, ein omrim shal yedei sulamos elu nidon hakosel kenifratz yosef me'eser amos, we're not going to give the status of Pesach to these sulamos, because we did so, then obviously the Pesach, one Pesach after the other, up and down along the width of this Kosa, would mean the Kosa is completely Nifratz, without any Mechitza, because the Pirtzim is the antithesis of the Mechitza. Ela nosnim l'sulamos toras Mechitza l'hakel, and therefore we have the status of two Chatzeros that have a Kosel between the two. Now again, we still have the kula of a Pesach, but we also have the kula of the kosel. Now what happens when you have two chatzeros with a kosel between them, and yet there's a Pesach? So in that case, again, this is a sugya later on in Masechta Eruvin, we give two options to the Bnei HaChatzer. Either they could join together and create one common Eruv, or they can separate, and each chatzer will generate its own valid Eruv, and Enom Osrim Zelze. So that Shmuel is defining and categorizing this situation of a Kosel where there are Sulamos up and down the width of the Kosel to a width of more than Eser Amos as the best of both worlds. We're going to give him a Toras Mechitza, and therefore we will not establish a pirza. Giving a Toras Mechitza means that each chatzah can make its own Eruv, but at the same time, since you can climb these ladders to get over the Kosel to the other side of the chatzah, there is a connection between the two chatzeros, and they can decide that they want to have one common Eruv. Rami le Rav Bruna le Rav Yehuda b'matzarta, which is, the Gemara gives you a location of where this happened, the Matzarta de Bei Rav Chanina, that was the place where they had the gat, you know, they used to crush the olives and grapes. And it said the following, Mi Amar Shmuel. Can Shmuel actually say Taurus Mechitza Olav that we can categorize and define the Sulam as a Mechitza in order to be Mekil and allow for separate Eruvin on each Chatzah separately? Va'amar Av Nachman Amar Shmuel. We have another statement of Shmuel that seems to contradict. He says, "Anshe mirpesos v'anshe chotzer shachlu v'lo ervu im yesh lefaneh daka arba ein oseres v'im lav oseres." Right, that was the statement of Shmuel that we learned on the top, on the bottom of Daf Nun Tesamid Beis. And what do we see from Shmuel? Shmuel says v'im lav oseres, in the absence of a daka, it means the sulam doesn't have a din of a machitza, but rather has a din of a pesach, which means that we consider the mirpeses and the chatzar as one and the same, without a machitza in between them, and by integrating the two, we need one common eruv. So why not apply the principle of machitza lahakil? So the Gemara answers, "Hachamai askinon." Delo gavoa mirpeses asora. That the mirpeses itself is not 10 tfachim on top of the chotzer. And therefore, we're going to say that even without a ladder, we're going to consider the two as one. As we said before, when there's no 10 tfachim between the ground and the mirpeses, then we view it as if the dayore ha-mirpeset are down on the karka, they're down on the ground. So the Gemara asks, again, the same question and answer, v'i lo gavo mirpesa asor ki ovid dako mai havi. If we're going to combine the aliyah with the b'nei achotz on the bottom, because the height of the mirpeset is less than 10 tfachim, then what good is it? What impact or effectiveness is there to the dayori mirpeset setting up a daka, this little window, you know, in front of the ladder? They're considered as if they live on the top, on the bottom, excuse me, and therefore the daka is not going to help them. The meguvefes ad eser amos, the game of the ovid daka this taluke is talik mioch. Same answer that we gave before. Now the Gemara wants to know about the status of a city that's called an Ir Shel Rabim. And we learned in that Mishnah that an Ir Shel Rabim needs shiur for a heker. There's a certain area where they have to set up their own eruv. Hana b'nei Kakunai. So again, there's a city called Kakuna. The Asu Lekame der of Yosef, Amrule Havlon Gavra Diliarev Lon Mosin. We need a person, some sort of reliable scholar, who will teach us the laws such that we can set up an Erev throughout the entire city. Now, since this city, at least originally, was an Ir Shel Rabim, therefore it requires a Shiur. Amalei Labaye, so Rav Yosef appoints his outstanding pupil Abaye, Zil Arev Lehu, you make the Erev for this city of Kakuna, and do it in a way, V'chazi delo mitzavches Allah b'bei midrasha, that they won't come into the base medrash to complain, meaning do a solid job. And what's fascinating to me, at least about the next Gemara, is we're going to go into the mindset of Abaye here, and he's going to vacillate back and forth, until he finally comes to a decision in his mind. What kind of Eruv can he make for the city of Kakuna? Ozel. So Abai checked out the city. Chazen he sees. Lahanu bote de psichi lenara. That there are homes at the very end. Right, this is a seashore city. And along the seashore, there are homes, and they open up to the, so to speak, the sand, the beach. They don't have an opening, or what we call a Pesach or a Chalon, towards the city itself. Again, in my mind, it's very hard to imagine such a thing. I mean, how would they go in and out of their homes unless they had their own boats and yachts? But in any event, that's the reality of it. Omar. So Abai came to the following conclusion. Again, he's not talking to anybody but himself. Hani lehevi shir lemasa. Why not establish a separate eruv for these batim that are on the seashore or on the riverbanks? And then we can set up another eruv for the rest of the city because we already have a shir. Hadar Omar, then Abai rejected it. And he said, no, if we read the Mishnah carefully, we'll come to the conclusion that these homes on the seashore could not possibly serve as a heker, as a shir. Why? Ein ma'arvin ala eskula. Tnan. Tnan means the language of the Mishnah is ein ma'arvin eskula. That you cannot set one eruv for the entire city of an Irshel Rabim. Michlal. If we read this carefully, we can be medayik. That the boy li'eruve matzi ma'arve. That if they had wanted to create an eruv for the entire city, they could have done so. But the Rabbanah made a separate takana, that people shouldn't confuse it with a Rishus HaRabim and think that you're allowed to carry in Rishus HaRabim. And what they did was they required that part of the city break off and have its own eruv. That's the heker that they required. But the heker is only meaningful if that part of the city that's breaking off, so to speak, for a shiur, could have been part of the original eruv. The fact that they set up a separate eruv is itself a flag that indicates shiur, that this is a city that's being permitted because of eruv. Everybody should know that there's a special eruv here. However, these homes that turn towards the riverbank, they could not possibly be part of the eruv of the city, because they have no connection whatsoever to the city. There's no Pesach, there's no Chalon between their homes and the homes in the balance of the city. So when do we, according to Abai's logic at this point, when do we have the ability to set up a certain neighborhood of houses as a shiur that's only if they could have been part of the area for the city? They are an integral part of the city, and yet we separated them for their own separate area. That's called a shiur, that's called a heker. But if you have houses that are not connected to the city without a Pesach or a Chalon towards the city, then those houses are basically outside of the city as a separate entity, and there's no way, no how, that the Eruv could have even encompassed those houses. And therefore, they don't lend themselves to Shiur. Abai continues talking to himself. Elo Yavilu Kivei. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the members of the houses on the seashore to get some sort of carpenter, or I don't know what kind of workman, and bang out windows on the other side of their homes, the side that faces the city, not the side that faces the seashore. And therefore, these windows, which are called kaveh in Aramaic, would connect those seashore homes with the rest of the city, such that they could have been part of the city with one Eruv, and we're going to separate them for a separate Eruv because of the Heker and the Shiur. Hadar Omar, now Abai goes back, and he changes his mind again. Lo boy, I'm going to convince myself that there's no need to knock out these windows in those batim, but rather there could be one shiur, there could be, we can use those batim as a separate eruv and as a flag, as a shiur. Why? Rabba set up a one eruv for the entire city of Mechoza. And what did he do? When he was in charge of the eruv of Mechoza, is Arsiosa. Arsiosa, which is the Aramaic word for neighborhood. So he had each neighborhood. make its own Eruv. He did not permit one Eruv for the entire city. And what separates each neighborhood in such a way that they require their own Eruv? Bishum Pera de Beiture. They used to take the pits of dates, Garine Tmarim, which are perfect animal fodder for the oxen, for the cows. And what they did was they dug gumos, they dug ditches, long ditches, at the end of each neighborhood, separating it from the neighborhood to its left. And what they did was they put those date pits inside the ditches, and the animals would come and eat the dates. I should say the date pits, right? And therefore, that separated one neighborhood from the other. And it was impossible, therefore, halachically, to set up one area for the entire city. Now, each neighborhood had its own Eruv, and there was no shiur. How could Rabbah have done such a thing? He should have broken up each neighborhood into two parts, with the rove and the mute. There was no shiur in the neighborhoods. And the only conclusion we could draw, therefore, to justify Rabbah's ruling is the cholchad v'chadavi shiur l'chavre, that each neighborhood serves as a shiur for the other neighborhood. Otherwise, the neighborhoods themselves should have been broken down into smaller parts. Oh, says Abaye, v'afal kavti boi li'arve, b'hadi adodi lo motzi li'arve. Here's a case where the two shchunot, each of which is a shear for the other one, could not possibly serve as a shear if we assume that a shear is only possible and valid if it's possible for that area, that shchuna, to be part of the area for the city. Here, because of these arsios, it's impossible for one neighborhood to be part of the area of another neighborhood. There couldn't be an area for the entire city because the city is broken down with these gumos that separate them into different neighborhoods. So how then could Rabbah set up an era for each neighborhood in itself and assume that the other neighborhood to its left, which has its own Erev, is a shear, and they're all reciprocally a shear, one neighborhood for the other? Hadar Amar Lo Dami. Abai now goes back in his mind and he says, no, I'm going to slug up that analogy. It's not similar at all. Hasam. In the case of Rabbah in Mechuza, Iboili Arve Derech Gagos, there are roofs that go from one, that connect one neighbor to the other. It's really interesting that they created these Gagos that would connect one neighborhood with the other neighborhood, meaning the houses in each neighborhood had gagos. Now, the truth of the matter is, I would assume, and again, I'm putting my head here out on the chopping board, that if you have, let's say, in a middle neighborhood, you have two houses going across the width, and each one on the right and one on the left, has a gag that connects it to the house on the other side of these gumos. All you need is one roof that connects this neighborhood with the other, and this with the other, and you don't have to have roofs that connect all the houses, one with the other, going up and down. I don't know if I'm right. But the reason I say this is because all we need is some sort of a connection between one neighborhood and the other that would allow the possibility of setting an Eruv that would combine both neighborhoods together. So the reason why Rabbah came to the conclusion that he could set up a shear in which each neighborhood is a shear for the next neighborhood is because theoretically he could have had one era for both neighborhoods, for all the neighborhoods, because of the gagos. But Hani, in my case, of the seashore homes in the city of Kokona, Loma Arvin, there's no possibility of setting up an Erev with the rest of the city, because there's nothing that connects them. There were no Gagos, there were no Chalonos, there were no Psachim, Hilkoch, Navdun, Kavi. So he goes back to his original position, Abaye, that we're going to have to instruct the seashore dwellers that they have to now bring out the carpenters and start breaking open Chalonos to their houses on the side of the city so that they are connected with the city itself, and they would have the possibility of setting up one joint Erev with the entire city, and now they can serve as a shiur. Hadar Omar, and then Abai says, no, I'm not going to hassle the seashore homes. Kavi nami lo boy. It's not necessary. They don't have to break these windows open. Why? Dahu beitivna. We have another story in the city of Pumbedisa. And it was a Beis HaTevin, which is a storage house for hay. The Havile Lamar Bar Popidosa, Min Pumpidisa. Okay, the two cities, I guess, that were near each other and had similar names. Or maybe he got the name Popidisa, his father, because he lived in Pumpidisa. I don't know. Anyway, what happened over there? Shavye Shira Le Pumpidisa. They set up an Eruv for the city of Pumbedisa, and what was the shear? The shear was this Beis HaTevin. Now again, I would have to assume, I don't have any proof for this, that the Beis HaTevin was also a residence. It wasn't just a storage house for hay. There were actually people who lived there, and it needs its own Eruv. Now, why does it need its own Eruv? Because it cannot be incorporated in the Eruv of the city. And the reason for that is because, he writes here, Eino Tzarech Klali Eruv. So this is not the way I said it before. Anyway, let me just, if you'll allow me, just to summarize what Abai learned from this story of Mar Bar Pofidisa. He says, Nitan laniach chelik min ha'ir b'tor shir le'ir af im eino shayach v'eino rashoy la'ariv ima. V'alkein nitan. Okay, so that goes back to the seashore. Okay, so the bottom line is that the only way I can understand this is by saying that the Beis HaTevin does not need an Erev at all. It's very very confusing to me. Let me just see if by chance he adds anything here. Just 1 second. If you can bear with me for just a moment, he says the following. Despite the fact that a storehouse is not a place of residence, you see, I was under the misimpression, and maybe there was such a Havamina, that the Beis HaTevin actually needs an Eruv. And the only way I could explain that is if there's Diurim, if there's somebody living in the Beis HaTevin. It's not just exclusively a haystack. But he's saying a storehouse is not a place of residence, and therefore doesn't require an Eruv. Oh, so this is a sugya actually much later on in Masechta Eruvin. It's going to be at least 12 days till we get to that. He says, we see that even an area that is anyway excluded from the Erev can function as the excluded section. So I'm not sure exactly what this haystack's, you know, storage house, exactly how it served as a shear for the city of Pumbedisa. Unless we're saying the following, that again, I say this with trepidation, with limited liability, that if you have physical structures, even if they're not resonance, and they don't need an Eruv, nevertheless they can still set up, serve as a shear. I don't believe they're going to set up an Eruv, because if there's no halachic validity or need for the Eruv, I don't know that you set up an Eruv. But the very fact that these houses are excluded from the Eruv, that itself is a heker, that's a shear. That's the best I can do, Rabosai, with this. Therefore, the final conclusion, the bottom line of our Abai said, "Hainu diomeli mar chazi delo mitzavchis ala bebeis midrasha." In other words, when Rav Yosef instructed me, make sure that you set up an eruv for this city of Kokona in such a way that they'll never complain. Because imagine if I would come and say to these homes on the seashore that you have to open up windows and start breaking down walls or part of walls, and they would come to the conclusion that that's not necessary because the these on the shore houses can serve as a shear even without windows, even though there's no possibility that they would be part of the area for the city. So you can have houses that are physically in proximity to the city, but halachically are completely separate and independent of the city. They're not part of the city, yet they can still serve as a shear. So it's good. It's a good thing that Abai at the end remembered this story of Pupadisa. Otherwise, he's getting into big trouble with those who would make a massive protest. These are the demonstrators. I don't know if they're wearing masks or not. And these demonstrators are going into the Beis Medrash to complain that Abai is forcing them to open up these windows. Now the Mishnah says that if you have a city of Rabin and became a city of Yochid, is Ein Ma'arvin Es Kula Elam Kein Osa Chutzala Ke Ir Chadosh. So that's the Shir. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Ir Achas Hoysa Bi Yehuda, the smallest city in the entire Judean district was Chadosha Shma, Hoyu Bo Chamishim Diorim Anoshim Noshim V'Taf. The total population of this city, which was called Chadosha, and I think we said yesterday that it's mentioned in Tanakh, in Sefer Yoshua, had all told 50 souls in it. And this was the smallest city in all of Eretz Yehuda. That's how the Rambam interprets it. The Chachamim always used this city as a shear for the city that was proximate to the Ir Chadosha. V'hi oisa shear, and the Ir Chadosha was a shear that was left out of the Eruv of the largest city. And again, you and I might have asked, well, is this Ir Chadosha in some way connected to the city? Are there streets or openings or windows that connect them? According to Abai, it's irrelevant. As long as it's proximate and it's viewed as the, perceived as the continuation of the city, it could serve as a shear. Ibailu Chadoshamal, the Gemara wants to know, what about the people living in the 50 souls that live in the Ir Chadosha? Do they need an Eruv? For sure they need an Eruv. Of course, again, we're saying that there's a shear. There's no shear without an Eruv. So they have to have their own Eruv. But the question is, do they have to make a shear inside this small city, this Ir Chadosha? So the Gemara rejects the whole logic that underlies this suffix. Is Chadosha if you view the entire city, including the Chadosh, as one entity, and I'll prove it to you because it serves as a shear, meaning the Ir Chadosh serves as a shear for the Gdola, then how much more so should the Ir Gdola be a shear for the Ir Ktana? Ella, the Gemara says, you have to reinterpret the original suffix. We made a big mistake. We misunderstood it. Ke'en chadasha. The question is there a shear required in an ir chadasha? Let's find an ir chadasha that is situated on its own, you know, it's nowhere proximate to any other city. It has 50 souls in it. Mao, do we need that part of the members of that city, of the residents of that city, set up their own separate Eruv, Bitaras Shir? And so machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Yud. The Chadom are boy Shir, the Chadom are low boy Shir. So the halacha and the status of a very, very small city as to whether or not we have to break up, you know, such a small number of people into two segments and two to set up a shear, that becomes an outstanding issue. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer Shalosh Chatzeros Shel Shnei Batim. Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the previous opinion that you need a city that has 50 residents, and he says all you need is 3 Chatzeros. Each Chatzer has 2 Batim. Omer Avchama Bar Guri Omer Rav Alochik Rabbi Shimon. However, Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, he has a third Shita, is afilu bayis echad vechatzer achas. Now, it's very strange. If he would have said bayis echad bechatzer achas, so you have one chatzer and has one bayis. But he gives you two options. It could be one bayis, and that'll be a shir, and that bayis is left out of the erev of the city. Or it could be a chatzer achas. Who's living in that chatzer? Chatzer achas al kedaitoch? Impossible. It would be meaningless to make an Eruv for a Chatzer if there's no bias in the Chatzer. It's not Royal Adira at all. Ela Ema bias Echad B'Chatzer Achas. Take out the Vav of V'Chatzer, make it into a base. It's bias Echad B'Chatzer Achas. So you have one house and one Chatzer. Where did Rabbi Yitzchak get this din from? Amalei Abai Rav Yosef, Had Rabbi Yitzchak, Gemara Osvara. Did he have some sort of tradition, a transmission of Torah that's called Gemara, or he had a svara? He came up with his own logic. Amalei, so Rav Yosef responds, Abai, why are you chepering me with such questions? Vaynafka Lemina, we don't paskin like Rabbi Yitzchak in any event. We paskin halacha like Rabbi Shimon, as we said before, in the name of Rav. Amalei. So Abai responds with a very famous idiomatic phrase that you'll find all over Shas, and that is Gemara, Gemara, Zmar Tateh. That if a person desires to teach or to learn Gemara, and he wants to know, he wants to understand the Gemara in the true way, I want to understand Rabbi Yitzchak and his din. Is Marta Tehe? Is this like a zemer? It's like, you know, it's like a little hum in the middle of a gigantic open area, meaning it's not significant. It's, even if the halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchak, I still have a right to ask what was Rabbi Yitzchak thinking. Now we start the new Mishnah, and this Mishnah takes us into the halacha of Tchumen. Mi shahaya b'tzad mizrach. Vi omar libno arev li b'tzad mayrav. Or b'mayrav omar libno arev li b'mizrach. Now at this point, we're going to understand the Gemara in the following, the Mishnah in the following way. The man is located at a certain distance to his house, and his son is being appointed as an agent to set up an Eruv Tchumen that is beyond the city, I'm sorry, beyond the house of this person. Now, assuming that this person is located within 2,000 amos of his house, then he certainly has access to his house. He's allowed to walk to his house, because with the onset of Shabbos, he's within 2,000 amos of his house. But he's asking his son to set up an Eruv on the other side of his house, meaning he himself is in the Tzad Mizrach of his house. The Eruv is going to be on the Tzad Marav of his house. So the Mishnah says, in Yeshe Menu Lebeis Alpayim Amo, Ule Ruvo Yoser Mikan, if he's 2,000 amos from his house, going from east towards the west, he has to stop at his house. And now he's asking his son to set up an Eruv on the west, which means beyond his house. And that means that the distance between the person where he's standing at the outset of Shabbos and the Eruv is more than 2,000 am. Is muto lebeso v'yosel l'tchum Eruvo. He's allowed to walk to his house, which is up to, but not beyond, 2,000 amos away from where he is at the outset of Shabbos, on the onset of Shabbos. And he cannot go towards the Eruv. He has no access to the Eruv, because the Eruv is more than 2,000 amos away from the place that he's standing, Bein HaShmoshos, at the onset of Shabbos. And therefore, the Eruv is completely worthless. However, ule ruvo alpayim amo lebeso yeser mikan. Now, this is a very strange formulation, because what the Mishnah is saying is that from where he's standing to his Eruv is 2,000 amo, but to his house is more than 2,000 amo. That just can't be, because the Eruv is to the west. It knows it's way beyond his house. So that's what the Gemara is going to try to explain right away. Is also a beso mutula eruvo. Since it's less than 2,000 amos away from the Eruv, he's allowed to walk to the Eruv, but he can't walk to his house because that's more than 2,000 amos away from where he was Kona Shvisa at the onset of Shabbos. Hanosen es eruvo biburo shel ir lo osim lo klum. Setting up an Eruv tchumen has to be meaningful. He set up his Eruv right outside the bounds of the city, the outer boundaries of the city, within 70 and 2/3 Amma of the city. We always give him that 70 and 2/3 Amma as what's called the Bura Shel Ir. So it's still considered part of the city. And to set up an Eruv, you have to go beyond the Ibura Shel Ir, beyond the 70 and 2/3 Amma. But Nisono Chutz L'tchum Afilu Ama Achas, if he goes beyond, now again the language of the Mishnah is very, very difficult. I'm going to explain it the way the Gemara at the Maskana will explain it. It means Chutz L'Ibura Shel Tchum. So he goes 70 Ama and 2/3, and then he goes another Afilu Ama Achas. Here we turn to the Afsamach Amid Beis. Is Masha Niskar Hu Mafsu. Which means that he's going to gain a tchum of Shabbos from that point and on. Which means the following. That I'll give the following example. He put his Eruv at a distance of 1,000 amah from the city, on the Mizrach side. So he's allowed to leave the city and go towards the Mizrach 3,000 amah, because he gets the 1,000 amah outside the city. He actually gets 2,000 amah. But let's set up the 2,000 amats of the city in order to validate the Eruv. Now you validate the Eruv, and from the point to there, he gets another 2,000 amma, all the way to the Mizrach. But let's say he wants to walk from his house and he wants to walk in this case towards the west, not towards the Mizrach, towards the Marav, he can only go 1,000 Amah. So in effect, he gained 1,000 Amah on the eastern side, but he lost and he forfeited 1,000 Amah on the western side. It's like a trade-off. Kasalka Daitak, the Gemara thought Nahavamina. That when it says in the Mizrach, in the Mishnah, La Mizrach, it means La Mizrach Beso. When it says Lamarav means Lamarav Beso, Bishlam, I understand the ratio of the Mishnah. Hey, Menula Beso, Alpayim Amma, Ule Ruvo, Yeser Mikan. That since he set up his Eruv beyond the Mizrach, therefore it is understood that if it's Alpayim Amma, in other words, if he was Konish Visa at his bias, then Mishkachas Le Demoti Le Beis V'Lo Moti Le Aruva, but the Eruv is beyond his bias, and if he's 2,000 Amma away from his bias, then he has no access whatsoever to his Eruv Tchumen, he's not allowed to go there, and therefore the Eruv is completely invalid. But Ella, but what do we do with the Sefer of the Reisha of the Mishnah? It says, Amenu Ule Ruva Alpayim Amala Beso Yeser Mikan, that from his legs to the Eruv, it's 2,000 Amma, but to his house, it's more than 2,000 Amma. How could that be possible? If he sets up his Eruv beyond his bias, Hechi Mishkachas La, and the Gemara offers two answers, two different approaches. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak says, Mi Savris LeMizrach, LeMizrach Beso, LeMarav, LeMarav Beso. We're not going to interpret the Mishnah that says that if he was Omeh B'Mizrach, it means he was Omeh to the Mizrach of his bias. And LeMarav means LeMarav Beso, means on the other side of his house. Lo, that's not the intention of the Mishnah. El LeMizrach, LeMizrach B'No, LeMarav, LeMarav B'No. In other words, he's standing between his house and his son. It's not that his son is ahead of him, setting up the Eruv all the way on the west, but rather his son is behind him. So therefore, he, the Balabayas, like the father, he's situated between his son and his house. So if his house is very close to him, but it's beyond the Eruv, that's one thing. But if, on the other hand, his Eruv is close to him, much closer than his bias, that's going to be a whole different situation. So again, I have the pictures here. Oh yeah, these pictures are actually not so good. They don't tell you where the Eruv is. But let's assume the Eruv is beyond the house. So if his son is there and he's close to the house, the father's close to the house, then the Eruv would be accessible to him. But in the second diagram that we have here, where his son is right behind him, he's right near his son, so then he can only get to his house. He can't get beyond his house if the Eruv was placed beyond his house. Rava Barav Shilo Amar Filu Tem LeMizrach LeMizrach Beso Ulamayrav LeMayrav Beso. Let's go back to our original understanding of the Mishnah. But Kigon Dekoy Beisei Belachsanya. We make a kind of a triangle here, and on one side of the triangle, you have the father. You go down to the lower side of this triangle with a straight line, and you get to the Eruv. Then you take a turn towards the Meirav, towards the left. And now you could have a situation where he's actually closer to the Eruv than he is to his own house, because whenever you have a diagonal, the diagonal is always longer than the straight line. So the straight line that links him, where he's standing, with his Eruv is only 2,000 Amma. but the diagonal to his house is 3,000 amma. Okay, now at this point, the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah, Nosein Eruva Betoch Ibura Shal Ir V'Losav Lo Klum. Only if he sets it up Chutz L'Tchum. One Amma Chutz L'Tchum. So the Gemara says, what do you mean Chutz L'Tchum? Sal Kedaitoch? There's no such thing as an Eruv that set up Chutz L'Tchum. You could have no access to your Eruv, and therefore it's an invalid Eruv. You have to add a few words over here. So he set up his Eruv outside the 70 and 2/3 Amma that are close to the city. Which means that it's a valid Eruv, it's a meaningful Eruv, because it's outside of the Iburo Shel Ir. If it would have been inside the Iburo Shel Ir, the Mishnah says, that's an invalid Eruv. And then the Mishnah says, Masha Niskar Hu Mafsid. Which means that if he set up his Eruv Chutz L'Tchum, which we said was beyond the Tchuma Shel Ir by one Amma, is Masha Niskar Hu Mafsid. So the Gemara asks, Masha Niskar Vesu Lo. That's all he's going to lose is the amount that he can go Chutz L'Ir on his side of the city. Let's call it the Mizrach of the city. But you're assuming that as far as the city itself is concerned, that's considered his Arba Amos. In other words, his house, or wherever a person is Kona Shvisi, gets Arba Amos. But in the case of a person in a city, he gets the entire city. The entire city is considered like Arba Amos. And therefore, the only amount that you could be mafsid him is the Yetzia Chutz Le'iro on the Mizrach side. Vasanya, but we have a braisa that says, Anosen es eruvo letochi bur betochi bur shal ir, lo asav lo klum. The son of Chutzli Burushal Ir, Afilu Ama Achas, is Mistaker Osa Ama. In other words, we give him that Ama, which is right near the place where he set up his Eruv, and that's one Ama outside of the Burushal Ir. And he's allowed to go from there another 2,000 Ama on that side. Again, we can give the example of the Mizrach. Umafsid es kol ha'ir kula. If the city is on his western side, then he loses the entire city. Midas ha'ir ololo b'midas ha'tchu. So if a person lives in a city, he's allowed to walk throughout the entire city as if it was his Arba Amos. And from the end of the city and on, we give him 2,000 amas in each direction. But a person who sets up his Eruv outside the city, even if it's one amma outside the city, he's no longer considered as if he lives in the city. He's not Dar Be'ir. And therefore, we're not going to consider and define the city as four amos, but rather, it's the width of the city, calculated and measured by 2,000 amma. So, for example, if you have a city that's 1,000 amma wide, and he sets up his Eruv one amma outside the city, then he can go from there, 2,000 amma, towards the Mizrach side. But if he wants to go back to the place where he was, and rotza lelech min ha-mokum shebo iniach ha-sev letzad marav, then we're only going to allow him to go one amma up to the city. And after that, we're going to measure 1,000 amma of the rochav ha'ir. Umisof ha'ir v'yelech mamshich lelech litzad marav od ke'elef amma lahashlim tchum alpayim amma shalo. So in effect, he's going to get a gain of one amma on the Mizrach side. He's going to lose 1,000 amma on the right side. So what does it say in the Mishnah? What does it mean? Masha Niskar Hu Mafsid Lo Kasha Kansha Kolso Midoso B'chatzio Ir Kansha Kolso Midoso B'sof Ha'ir.
So the Braisa is talking about a case of Kolso Midoso B'chatzio Ir Hoysa Ir Rechov Alpayim Amo. So it was 2,000 Amo wide. And so he set up his Erev far away from the city on the eastern side. So he calculates the 2,000 Amma from his Erev towards the western side, and he ends up in the middle of the city. Both in Kazer, Nimdedes Ha'ir Atzma, Leminyan Alpayim Amashalo. Which means that he will measure his city, the city itself, for the measurement of 2,000 Amma, his 2,000 Amma that he gets. Nimtza, Sheniskar Amma Achas Lemizroch. In the Braisa, he gets one Amma towards the eastern side, but Vehivsid, he loses Elif Amma on the western side. But Khan, our mission is talking about a case of Kolso Midoso B'sofa Ir, which means it was a smaller city, smaller than 2,000 Amma. He puts his Erev close to the city, and when he's Mahalech, when he walks, Alpayim Amma, Meiruvo, Litzad Meirov, then Ein Tchumo Kola B'yemtza Ir, Ela B'sofa. U'biofen Kazeni Donis Lo Ha'ir Kula Karba Amos. V'ein rochva m'mayit mitchum alpayim amo shelo valkeina omra mishnah ma sheniskar hu mafsid shekem biofen zehu niskar ama achas lemizroch hu mafsid ama achas lemara v'lo yose she'ein ha'ir atzma ololo min acheshmet. So just to summarize this Gemara, we'll say the following. That in the Braisa, we're dealing with a case where his 2,000 Amma measure ends in the middle of the town. And if you take a look at this little diagram, you'll see that his 2,000 Amma ends in the middle of the town. And in this case, the width of the town counts fully towards the person's Tchum measure, and he may only walk in the half of the town that is within his tchum. Khan, here in the Mishnah, we're dealing with a case in which his 2,000 Amma measure ended at the end of the town, or beyond the end of the town, and therefore in this case the entire town is reckoned as a mere 4 Amos. He may resume measuring his tchum beyond the other end of the town. And he doesn't lose more on the town side than he gains in the other direction. Now, it seems that he does lose slightly more than he gains, because at any rate, you know, he loses the 4 amos in which the town has been reduced to 4 amos. But in any event, Ukirav Idi, as Rav Idi taught us, the Omer Rav Idi, Omer Rav Yeshub and Levi, Hoyamoded Uba, if somebody was measuring 2,000 amos to establish his tchum. In other words, let's say he finds himself on the road, Holech Baderech, in Bein HaShemashos, and he's Konesh Visa, exactly where he's located. He was unaware that he was within the Tchum of the ear. So he doesn't acquire his Shvisa, his Tchum, since he had no intention to do so. The Kolsa Midosa Bechatzer Ir, his 2,000 measure Amma ends in the middle of the town, so the part of the town lies within the Tchum, and part beyond it, Ein Lo El Chatzer Ir. He has nothing beyond half the town that's within his Tchum. He cannot walk to the half of the town that's beyond his Tchum, but Kolsa Midosa Besofa Ir, if on the other hand, his 2,000 Amma measure ended at the end of the city or beyond, is Nasi Sloa Ir Kula Karba Amos. The entire city is now reckoned, now considered like Dalin Amos, Mashlim Lo Sashar, and we complete the remainder of him. In other words, after subtracting the 4 Amos of the city, he goes back to measuring his Tchum at the end of the town. So, for example, let's say he was 1,000 amma east of the town. The town was 900 ammas wide. He may walk 1,000 ammas to the town, through the entire town, an additional 996 ammas beyond the town. Amar Rav Idi, Elu V'Elu, Divrei Navis. He says these rules, which I quote in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, are nothing but prophecy. You know, there's no logical way of deriving this distinction. Now, it's just as a prophet, you know, relays his information, which is communicated by God, he needs no logical corroboration. So it's true of prophecy. The words are definitely true despite our inability to demonstrate them logically. Now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would not have made such an apparent arbitrary ruling unless he had received it from his rebbein in a mesorah, because mali kolsa b'chatzir, mali kolsa b'sofair. From a logical perspective, what difference does it make if his tchum ends in the middle of the town or if his tchum ends at the end of the town? In both cases, either the town should be considered as dalet amos, or the town should be counted towards his tchum. But to make that distinction makes no sense. So we're going to stop here with Omar Rava, and that's two lines before the end of Daf Samach Amid Beis.